or to another. Divide and distribute every object into the causal, formal, and the material. Think of thy last hour. Let the wrong which is done by a man stay there where the wrong was done. Direct thy attention to what is said. Let thy understanding enter into the things that are doing, and the things which do them. Adorn thyself with simplicity and modesty and with indifference towards the things which lie between virtue and vice. Love mankind, follow God. The poet says that law rules all, and it is enough to remember that law rules all. About death, whether it's a dispersion or a resolution into atoms or annihilation, it is either extinction or change. About pain, the pain which is intolerable carries us off, but that which lasts a long time is tolerable, and the mind maintains its own tranquility by retiring into itself, and the ruling faculty is not made worse. But the parts which are harmed by pain, let them, if they can, give their opinion about it. About fame, look at the minds of those who seek fame. Observe what they are, and what kind of things they avoid, and what kind of things they pursue. And consider that as the heaps of sand piled on one another hide the former sands. So in life, the events which go on before are soon covered by those which come after. From Plato, the man who has an elevated mind and takes a view of all time and of all substance, dost thou suppose it possible for him to think that human life is anything great? It is not possible, he said. Such a man then will think that death also is no evil. Certainly not. From Antisthenes, it is royal to do good and to be abused. It is a base thing for the countenance to be obedient and to regulate and compose itself as the mind commands, and for the mind not to be regulated and composed by itself. It is not right to vex ourselves at things, for they care naught about it. To the immortal gods, and give us joy. Life must be reaped like the ripe ears of corn. One man is born, another dies. If gods care not for me and my children, there is reason for it. For the good is with me and the just. No joining others in their wailing, no violent emotion. From Plato. But I would make this man a sufficient answer, which is this. Thou sayest not well, if thou thinkest that a man who is good for anything at all ought to confute the hazard of life or death, and should not rather look to this only in all that he does, whether he is doing what is just or unjust, and the works of a good or bad man. For thus it is, men of Athens, in truth, wherever a man has placed himself, thinking it the best place for him, or has been placed by a commander, there, in my opinion, he ought to say, and to abide the hazard, taking nothing into the reckoning, either death or anything else, before the baseness of deserting his post. But, my good friend, reflect whether that which is noble and good is not something different from saving and being saved. For as to a man living such or such a time, at least one who is really a man, consider if this is not a thing to be dismissed from the thoughts, and there must be no love of life, but as to these matters, a man must entrust them to the Deity, and believe what the women say, that no man can escape his destiny, the next inquiry being how he may best live the time he has to live. look round at the courses of the stars, as if thou wert going along with them, and constantly consider the changes of the elements into one another, for such thoughts purge away the filth of the terrene life. This is a fine saying of Plato, that he who is discoursing about men should look also at the earthly things, as if he viewed them from some higher place, should look at them in their assemblies, armies, agricultural labors, marriages, treaties, births, deaths, noise of the courts of justice, desert places, various nations of barbarians, feasts, lamentations, markets, a mixture of all things, and an orderly combination of contraries. Consider the past, such great changes of political supremacies. Thou mayst foresee also the things which will be, for they will certainly be of like form, and it is not possible that they should deviate from the order of the things which take place now. Accordingly, to have contemplated human life for 40 years is the same as to have contemplated it for 10,000 years. For what more wilt thou see? That which is grown from the earth to the earth, but that which is sprung from heavenly seed, back to the heavenly realms, returns. This is either a dissolution of the mutual involution of the atoms, or a similar dispersion of the unsentient elements. With food and drinks and cunning magic arts, turning the channel's course to escape from death, the breeze which heaven has sent, we must endure and toil without complaining. Another may be more expert in casting his opponent, but he is not more social, nor more modest, nor better disciplined to meet all that happens, nor more considerate with respect to the faults of his neighbors. Where any work can be done conformably to the reason which is common to gods and men, there we have nothing to fear. For where we are able to get profit by means of the activity which is successful and proceeds according to our constitution, there no harm is to be suspected. Everywhere and at all times it is in thy power piously to acquiesce in thy present condition and to behave justly to those who are about thee and to exert thy skill upon thy present thoughts, that nothing shall steal into them without being well examined. Do not look around thee to discover other men's ruling principles, but look straight to this, to what nature leads thee, both the universal nature through the things which happen to thee, and thy own nature through the acts which must be done by thee. But every being ought to do that which is according to its constitution, and all other things have been constituted for the sake of rational beings, just as among irrational things the inferior for the sake of the superior, but the rational for the sake of one another. The prime principle, then, in man's constitution is the social, and the second is not to yield to the persuasions of the body, for it is the peculiar office of the rational and intelligent motion to circumscribe itself, and never to be overpowered either by the motion of the senses or of the appetites, for both are animal. But the intelligent motion claims superiority, and does not permit itself to be overpowered by the others, and with good reason, for it is formed by nature to use all of them. The third thing in the rational constitution is freedom from error and from deception. Let then the ruling principle hold fast to these things, go straight on, and it has what is its own. Consider thyself to be dead, and to have completed thy life up to the present time, and live according to nature the remainder which is allowed thee. Love that only which happens to thee, and is spun with the thread of thy destiny. for what is more suitable. In everything which happens, keep before thy eyes those to whom the same things happened, and how they were vexed, and treated them as strange things, and found fault with them. And now where are they? Nowhere. Why then dost thou too choose to act in the same way? And why dost thou not leave these agitations, which are foreign to nature, to those who cause them, and those who are moved by them? And why art thou not altogether intent upon the right way of making use of the things which happen to thee? For then thou wilt use them well, and they will be a material for thee to work on. Only attend to thyself, and resolve to be a good man in every act which thou dost. And remember, look within. Within is the fountain of good, and it will ever bubble up if thou wilt ever dig. The body ought to be compact, and to show no irregularity either in motion or attitude. For what the mind shows in the face, by maintaining it in the expression of intelligence and propriety, that ought to be required also in the whole body. But all these things should be observed without affectation. The art of life is more like the wrestler's art than the dancer's, in respect of this, that it should stand ready and firm to meet onsets which are sudden and unexpected. Constantly observe who those are whose approbation thou wishest to have, and what ruling principles they possess. For then thou wilt neither blame those who offend involuntarily, nor wilt thou want their approbation, if thou lookest to the sources of their opinions and appetites. Every soul, the philosopher says, is involuntarily deprived of truth. Consequently, in the same way, it is deprived of justice and temperance and benevolence, of everything of the kind. It is most necessary to bear this constantly in mind, for thus thou wilt be more gentle towards all. In every pain, let this thought be present, that there is no dishonor in it, nor does it make the governing intelligence worse, for it does not damage the intelligence either, so far as the intelligence is rational, or so far as it is social. Indeed, in the case of most pains, let this remark of Epicurus aid thee, that pain is neither intolerable nor everlasting, if thou bearest in mind that it has its limits, and if thou addest nothing to it in imagination. Remember this too, that we do not perceive that many things which are disagreeable to us are the same as pain, such as excessive drowsiness, and the being scorched by heat, and the having no appetite. When, then, thou art discontented about any of these things, say to thyself that thou art yielding to pain. Take care not to feel towards the inhuman as they feel towards men. How do we know if Telauges was not superior in character to Socrates? For it is not enough that Socrates died a more noble death, and disputed more skillfully with the sophists, and passed the night in the cold with more endurance, and that, when he was bid to arrest Leon of Somalis, he considered it more noble to refuse, and that he walked in a swaggering way in the streets, though as to this fact one may have great doubts if it was true. But we ought to inquire what kind of a soul it was that Socrates possessed, and if he was able to be content with being just towards men and pious towards the gods, neither idly vexed on account of men's villainy, nor yet making himself a slave to any man's ignorance, nor receiving, as strange, anything that fell to his share out of the universal, or enduring it as intolerable, or allowing his understanding to sympathize with the effects of the miserable flesh. Nature has not so mingled the intelligence with the composition of the body as not to have allowed thee the power of circumscribing thyself and of bringing under subjection to thyself all that is thy own. For it is very possible to be a divine man and to be recognized as such by no one. Always bear this in mind. And another thing, too, that very little indeed is necessary for living a happy life. And because thou hast despaired of becoming a dialectician and skilled in the knowledge of nature, do not for this reason renounce the hope of being both free and modest and social and obedient to God. It is in thy power to live free from all compulsion in the greatest tranquility of mind, even if all the world cry out against thee as much as they choose, and even if wild beasts tear in pieces the members of this needed matter which has grown around thee. For what hinders the mind in the midst of all this from maintaining itself in tranquility and in a just judgment of all surrounding things and in a ready use of the objects which are presented to it, so that the judgment may say to the thing which falls under its observation, this thou art in substance, reality, though in men's opinion thou mayst appear to be of a different kind, and the use shall say to that which falls under the hand, thou art the thing that I was seeking, for to me that which presents itself is always a material for virtue, both rational and political, and in a word, for the exercise of art, which belongs to man or God. For everything which happens has a relationship either to God or man, and is neither new nor difficult to handle, but usual and apt matter to work on. The perfection of moral character consists in this, in passing every day as the last, and being neither violently excited, nor torpid, nor playing the hypocrite. The gods who are immortal are not vexed because during so long a time they must tolerate continually men such as they are, and so many of them bad, and besides this, they also take care of them in all ways. But thou, who art destined to end so soon, art thou wearied of enduring the bad, and this too, when thou art one of them? It is a ridiculous thing for a man not to fly from his own badness, which is indeed possible, but to fly from other men's badness, which is impossible. Whatever the rational and political social faculty finds to be neither intelligent nor social, it properly judges to be inferior to itself. When thou hast done a good act, and another has received it, why dost thou still look for a third thing besides these, as fools do, either to have the reputation of having done a good act or to obtain a return? No man is tired of receiving what is useful, but it is useful to act according to nature. Do not then be tired of receiving what is useful by doing it to others. The nature of the all moved to make the universe, but now either everything that takes place comes by way of consequence or continuity, or even the chief things towards which the ruling power of the universe directs its own movement are governed by no rational principle. If this is remembered, it will make thee more tranquil in many things. Book 8. This reflection also tends to the removal of the desire of empty fame, that is no longer in thy power to have lived the whole of thy life, or at least thy life from thy youth upwards, like a philosopher. But both to many others and to thyself, it is plain that thou art far from philosophy. Thou hast fallen into disorder then, so that it is no longer easy for thee to get the reputation of a philosopher, and thy plan of life also opposes it. If, then, thou hast truly seen where the matter lies, throw away the thought, how thou shalt seem to others, and be content if thou shalt live the rest of thy life in such wise as thy nature wills. Observe, then, what it wills, and let nothing else distract thee, for thou hast had experience of many wanderings without having found happiness anywhere, not in syllogisms, nor in wealth, nor in reputation, nor in enjoyment, nor anywhere. Where is it, then? In doing what man's nature requires. How, then, shall a man do this? If he has principles, from which come his effects and his acts? What principles? Those which relate to good and bad, the belief that there is nothing good for man, which does not make him just, temperate, manly, free, and that there is nothing bad, which does not do the contrary to what has been mentioned. On the occasion of every act, ask thyself, how is this with respect to me? Shall I repent of it? A little time, and I am dead, and all is gone. What more do I seek, if what I am now doing is the work of an intelligent living being, and a social being, and one who is under the same law with God? Alexander, and Caius, and Pompeius, what are they in comparison with Diogenes, and Heraclitus, and Socrates? For they were acquainted with things, and their causes, forms, and their matter, and the ruling principles of these men were the same or conformable to their pursuits. But as to the others, how many things had they to care for, and to how many things were they slaves? Consider that men will do the same things nevertheless, even though thou shouldest burst. This is the chief thing. Be not perturbed, for all things are according to the nature of the universal, and in a little time thou wilt be nobody and nowhere, like Hadrianus and Augustus. In the next place, having fixed thy eyes steadily on thy business, look at it, and at the same time, remembering that it is thy duty to be a good man, and what man's nature demands, do that without turning aside, and speak as it seems to thee most just. Only let it be with a good disposition, and with modesty, and without hypocrisy. The nature of the universal has this work to do, to remove to that place the things which are in this, to change them, to take them away hence, and to carry them there. All things are change, yet we need not fear anything new. All things are familiar to us, but the distribution of them still remains the same. Every nature is contented with itself when it goes on its way well, and a rational nature goes on its way well when in its thoughts it assents to nothing false or uncertain, and when it directs its movements to social acts only, and when it confines its desires and aversions to the things which are in its power, and when it is satisfied with everything that is assigned to it by the common nature. For of this common nature, every particular nature is a part, as the nature of the leaf is a part of the nature of the plant, except that in the plant the nature of the leaf is part of a nature which has not perception or reason, and is subject to be impeded. But the nature of man is part of a nature which is not subject to impediments, and is intelligent and just, since it gives to everything in equal portions, and according to its worth, times, substance, cause, form, activity, and incident. But examine, not to discover, that any one thing compared with any other single thing is equal in all respects. But taking all the parts together of one thing, and comparing them with all the parts together of another. Thou hast not leisure or ability to read, but thou hast leisure or ability to check arrogance. Thou hast leisure to be superior to pleasure and pain. Thou hast leisure to be superior to love of fame, and not to be vexed at stupid and ungrateful people, nay, even to care for them. Let no man any longer hear thee finding fault with the court life or with thy own. Repentance is a kind of self-reproof for having neglected something useful. But that which is good must be something useful, and the perfect good man should look after it. But no such man would ever repent of having refused any sensual pleasure. Pleasure, then, is neither good nor useful. This thing, what is it in itself, in its own constitution? What is its substance and material? And what is its causal nature or form? And what is it doing in the world? And how long does it subsist? When thou risest from sleep with reluctance, remember that it is according to thy constitution and according to human nature to perform social acts. But sleeping is common also to irrational animals. But that which is according to each individual's nature is also more peculiarly its own and more suitable to its nature, and indeed also more agreeable, constantly and, if it be possible, on the occasion of every impression on the soul, apply to it the principles of physic, of ethic, and of dialectic. Whatever man thou meetest with, immediately say to thyself, what opinions has this man about good and bad? For if with respect to pleasure and pain, and the causes of each, and with respect to fame and ignominy, death and life, he has such and such opinions, it will seem nothing wonderful or strange to me if he does such and such things. And I shall bear in mind that he is compelled to do so. Remember that it is a shame to be surprised if the fig tree produces figs. So it is to be surprised if the world produces such and such things of which it is productive. And for the physician and the helmsman, it is a shame to be surprised if a man has a fever or if the wind is unfavorable. Remember that to change thy opinion and to follow him who corrects thy error is as consistent with freedom as it is to persist in thy error. For it is thy own, the activity which is exerted according to thy own movement and judgment, and indeed according to thy own understanding too. If a thing is in thy own power, why dost thou do it? But if it is in the power of another, whom dost thou blame? The atoms, chance, or the gods? Both are foolish. Thou must blame nobody, for if thou canst, correct that which is the cause. But if thou canst not do this, correct at least the thing itself. But if thou canst not even do this, of what use is it to thee to find fault? For nothing should be done without a purpose. That which has died falls not out of the universe. If it stays here, it also changes here, and is dissolved into its proper parts, which are elements of the universe and of thyself. And these too change, and they murmur not. Everything exists for some end, a horse, a vine. Why dost thou wonder? Even the sun will say, I am for some purpose, and the rest of the gods will say the same. For what purpose, then, art thou? To enjoy pleasure? See if common sense allows this. Nature has had regard in everything, no less to the end than to the beginning and the continuance, just like the man who throws up a ball. What good is it then for the ball to be thrown up, or harm for it to come down, or even to have fallen? And what good is it to the bubble while it holds together, or what harm when it is burst? The same may be said of a light also. Turn it, the body, inside out, and see what kind of thing it is, and when it has grown old, what kind of thing it becomes, and when it is diseased. Short-lived are both the praiser and the praised, and the rememberer and the remembered, and all this in a nook of this part of the world. And not even here do all agree, no, not anyone, with himself, and the whole earth, too, is a point. Attend to the matter which is before thee. whether it's an opinion, or an act, or a word. Thou sufferest this justly, for thou choosest rather to become good tomorrow than to be good today. Am I doing anything? I do it with reference to the good of mankind. Does anything happen to me? I receive it and refer it to the gods and the source of all things, from which all that happens is derived. Such as bathing appears to thee, oil, sweat, dirt, filthy water, all things disgusting. So is every part of life and everything. Lucilla saw Verus die, and then Lucilla died. Secunda saw Maximus die, and then Secunda died. Epitinicus saw Diotimus die, and then Epitinicus died. Antoninus saw Faustina die, and then Antoninus died. Such is everything. Sella saw Hadrianus die, and then Sella died. And those sharp-witted men, either seers or men inflated with pride, where are they? For instance, the sharp-witted men, Charax, and Demetrius, the Platonist, and Eudaimon, and anyone else like them? All ephemeral, dead long ago. Some, indeed, have not been remembered, even for a short time, and others have become the heroes of fables, and again, others have disappeared even from fables. Remember this, then, that this little compound, thyself, must either be dissolved, or thy poor breath must be extinguished, or be removed and placed elsewhere. It is satisfaction to a man to do the proper works of a man. Now it is a proper work of man to be benevolent to his own kind, to despise the movements of the senses, to form a just judgment of plausible appearances, and to take a survey of the nature of the universe and of the things which happen in it. There are three relations between thee and other things, the one to the body which surrounds thee, the second to the divine cause from which all things come to all, and third, to those who live with thee. Pain is either an evil to the body, then let the body say what it thinks of it, or to the soul, but it is in the power of the soul to maintain its own serenity and tranquility, and not to think that pain is an evil. For every judgment and movement and desire and aversion is within, and no evil ascends so high. Wipe out thy imaginations by often saying to thyself, now it is in my power to let no badness be in this soul, nor desire, nor any perturbation at all. But looking at all things I see, what is their nature? And I use each according to its value. Remember this power, which thou hast from nature. Speak both in the Senate and to every man, whoever he may be, appropriately, not with any affectation. Use plain discourse. Augustus' court, wife, daughter, descendants, ancestors, sister, Agrippa, kinsmen, intimates, friends, Arius, Maecenas, physicians, and sacrificing priests. The whole court is dead. Then turn to the rest, not considering the death of a single man, but of a whole race, as of the Pompeii, and that which is inscribed on the tombs, the last of his race. Then consider what trouble those before them have had that they might leave a successor, and then that of necessity, someone must be the last. Again, here consider the death of a whole race. It is thy duty to order thy life well in every single act, and if every act does its duty as far as it is possible, be content, and no one is able to hinder thee, so that each act shall not do its duty, but something external will stand in the way. Nothing will stand in the way of thy acting justly and soberly and considerately. But perhaps some other active power will be hindered. Well, but by acquiescing in the hindrance, and by being content to transfer thy efforts to that which is allowed, another opportunity of action is immediately put before thee in place of that which was hindered, and one which will adapt itself to this ordering of which we are speaking. Receive wealth or prosperity without arrogance, and be ready to let it go. If thou didst ever see a hand cut off, or a foot, or a head, lying anywhere apart from the rest of the body, such does a man make himself, as far as he can, who is not content with what happens, and separates himself from others, or does anything unsocial. Suppose that thou hast detached thyself from the natural unity. For thou wast made by nature apart, and now thou hast cut thyself off. Yet here there is this beautiful provision, that it is in thy power again to unite thyself. God has allowed this to no other part, after it has been separated and cut asunder, to come together again. But consider the kindness by which he has distinguished man, for he has put it in his power not to be separated at all from the universal, and when he has been separated, he has allowed him to return and to be united and to resume his place as a part. As the nature of the universal has given to every rational being all other powers that it has, so we have received from it this power also. For as the universal nature converts and fixes in its predestined place everything which stands in the way and opposes it, and makes such things a part of itself, so also the rational animal is able to make every hindrance its own material, and to use it for such purposes as it may have designed. Do not disturb thyself by thinking of the whole of thy life. Let not thy thoughts at once embrace all the various troubles which thou mayst expect to befall thee, but on every occasion ask thyself, what is there in this which is intolerable and past bearing? For thou wilt be ashamed to confess. In the next place, remember that neither the future nor the past pains thee, but only the present. But this is reduced to a very little, if thou only circumscribest it, and chidest thy mind, if it is unable to hold out against even this. Does Panthea, or Phergamus, now sit by the tomb of Verus? Does Chereas, or Diotimus, sit by the tomb of Hadrianus? That would be ridiculous. Well, suppose they did sit there. Would the dead be conscious of it? And if the dead were conscious, would they be pleased? And if they were pleased, would that make them immortal? Was it not in the order of destiny that these persons, too, should first become old women and old men, and then die? What, then, would those do after these were dead? All this is foul smell and blood in a bag. If thou canst see sharp, look and judge wisely, says the philosopher. In the constitution of the rational animal, I see no virtue which is opposed to justice, but I see a virtue which is opposed to love of pleasure, and that is temperance. If thou takest away thy opinion about that which appears to give thee pain, thou thyself standest in perfect security. Who is this self? The reason? But I am not reason. Be it so. Let then the reason itself not trouble itself. But if any other part of thee suffers, let it have its own opinion about itself. Hindrance to the perceptions of sense is an evil to the animal nature. Hindrance to the movement desires is equally an evil to the animal nature. And something else also is equally an impediment and an evil to the constitution of plants. So then, that which is a hindrance to the intelligence is an evil to the intelligent nature. Apply all these things then to thyself. Does pain or sensuous pleasure affect thee? The senses will look to that. Has any obstacle opposed thee in thy efforts towards an object? If indeed thou wast making this effort absolutely unconditionally, or without any reservation, certainly this obstacle is an evil to thee, considered as a rational animal. But if thou takest into consideration the usual course of things, thou hast not yet been injured or even impeded. The things, however, which are proper to the understanding, no other man is used to impede. For neither fire, nor iron, nor tyrant, nor abuse touches it in any way. When it has been made a sphere, it continues a sphere. It is not fit that I should give myself pain, for I have never intentionally given pain, even to another. Different things delight different people, but it is my delight to keep the ruling faculty sound, without turning away either from any man or from any of the things which happen to men, but looking at and receiving all with welcome eyes and using everything according to its value. See that thou secure this present time to thyself. For those who rather pursue posthumous fame do not consider that the men of after time will be exactly such as these whom they cannot bear now, and both are mortal. And what is it in any way to thee, if these men of after time utter this or that sound, or have this or that opinion about thee? Take me and cast me where thou wilt, for there I shall keep my divine part tranquil, that is content, if it can feel and act conformably to its proper constitution. Is this, change of place, sufficient reason why my soul should be unhappy, and worse than it was, depressed, expanded, shrinking, affrighted? And what wilt thou find which is sufficient reason for this? Nothing can happen to any man which is not a human accident, nor to an ox which is not according to the nature of an ox, nor to a vine which is not according to the nature of a vine, nor to a stone which is not proper to a stone. If, then, there happens to each thing both what is usual and natural, why shouldst thou complain? For the common nature brings nothing which may not be borne by thee. If thou art pained by any external thing, it is not this thing that disturbs thee, but thy own judgment about it, and it is in thy power to wipe out this judgment now. But if anything in thy own disposition gives thee pain, who hinders thee from correcting thy opinion? And even if thou art pained because thou art not doing some particular thing which seems to thee to be right, why dost thou not rather act than complain? But some insuperable obstacle is in the way. Do not be grieved then, for the cause of its not being done depends not on thee, but it is not worthwhile to live if this cannot be done. Take thy departure then from life contentedly, just as he dies who is in full activity, and well pleased too with the things which are obstacles. Remember that the ruling faculty is invincible. When self-collected, it is satisfied with itself. If it does nothing which it does not choose to do, even if it resist from mere obstinacy, what then will it be when it forms a judgment about anything aided by reason and deliberately? Therefore, the mind which is free from passions is a citadel, for man has nothing more secure to which he can fly for refuge, and for the future be inexpugnable. He, then, who has not seen this, is an ignorant man, but he who has seen it and does not fly to this refuge is unhappy. Say nothing more to thyself than what the first appearances report. Suppose that it has been reported to thee that a certain person speaks ill of thee. This has been reported, but that thou hast been injured. That has not been reported. I see that my child is sick, I do see, but that he is in danger, I do not see. Thus then, always abide by the first appearances, and add nothing thyself from within, and then nothing happens to thee. Or rather, add something like a man who knows everything that happens in the world. A cucumber is bitter. Throw it away. There are briars in the road. Turn aside from them. This is enough. Do not add. And why were such things made in the world? For thou wilt be ridiculed by a man who is acquainted with nature, as thou wouldst be ridiculed by a carpenter and shoemaker if thou didst find fault, because thou seest in their workshop shavings and cuttings from the things which they make. And yet they have places into which they can throw these shavings and cuttings, and the universal nature has no external space. But the wondrous part of her art is that though she has circumscribed herself, everything within her, which appears to decay and to grow old and to be useless, she changes into herself, and again makes other new things from these very same, so that she requires neither substance from without, nor wants a place into which she may cast that which decays. She is content then with her own space, and her own matter, and her own art. Neither in thy actions be sluggish, nor in thy conversation without method, nor wandering in thy thoughts, nor let there be in thy soul inward contention or external effusion, nor in life be so busy as to have no leisure. Suppose that men kill thee, cut thee in pieces, curse thee. What then can these things do to prevent thy mind from remaining pure, wise, sober, just? For instance, if a man should stand by a limpid, pure spring and curse it, the spring never ceases sending up potable water, and if he should cast clay into it, or filth, it will speedily disperse them and wash them out, and will not be at all polluted. How then shalt thou possess a perpetual fountain, and not a mere well? By forming thyself hourly to freedom, conjoined with contentment, simplicity, and modesty. He who does not know what the world is, does not know where he is. And he who does not know for what purpose the world exists, does not know who he is, nor what the world is. But he who has failed in any one of these things could not even say for what purpose he exists himself. What then dost thou think of him who avoids or seeks the praise of those who applaud, of men who know not either where they are or who they are? Dost thou wish to be praised by a man who curses himself thrice every hour? Wouldst thou wish to please a man who does not please himself? Does a man please himself who repents of nearly everything that he does? No longer let thy breathing only act in concert with the air which surrounds thee, but let thy intelligence also now be in harmony with the intelligence which embraces all things. For the intelligent power is no less diffused in all parts, and pervades all things for him who is willing to draw it to him, than the aerial power for him who is able to respire it. Generally, wickedness does no harm at all to the universe, and particularly the wickedness of one man does no harm to another. It is only harmful to him who has it in his power to be released from it as soon as he shall choose. To my own free will, the free will of thy neighbor is just as indifferent as his poor breath and flesh. For though we are made especially for the sake of one another, still the ruling power of each of us has its own office. For otherwise, my neighbor's wickedness would be my harm, which God has not willed, in order that my unhappiness may not depend on another. The sun appears to be poured down, and in all directions indeed it is diffused. Yet it is not effused, for this diffusion is an extension. Accordingly, its rays are called extensions, because they are extended. But one may judge what kind of a thing a ray is if he looks at the sun's light passing through a narrow opening into a darkened room, for it is extended in a right line, and, as it were, is divided when it meets with any solid body which stands in the way and intercepts the air beyond. But there the light remains fixed and does not glide or fall off. Such, then, ought to be the outpouring and diffusion of the understanding, and it should in no way be an effusion, but an extension, and it should make no violent or impetuous collision with the obstacles which are in its way, nor yet fall down, but be fixed, and enlighten that which receives it. For a body will deprive itself of the illumination, if it does not admit it. He who fears death either fears the loss of sensation, or a different kind of sensation. But if thou shalt have no sensation, neither wilt thou feel any harm. And if thou shalt acquire another kind of sensation, thou wilt be a different kind of living being, and thou wilt not cease to live. Men exist for the sake of one another. Teach them, then, or bear with them. In one way an arrow moves, in another way the mind. The mind, indeed, both when it exercises caution and when it is employed about inquiry, moves straight onward, not the less, and to its object. Enter into every man's ruling faculty, and also let every other man enter into thine. Book 9. He who acts unjustly acts impiously. For since the universal nature has made rational animals for the sake of one another, to help one another according to their deserts, but in no way to injure one another, he who transgresses her will is clearly guilty of impiety towards the highest divinity. And he too, who lies, is guilty of impiety to the same divinity. For the universal nature is the nature of things that are, and things that are have a relation to all things that come into existence. And further, this universal nature is named truth, and is the prime cause of all things that are true. He then who lies intentionally is guilty of impiety, insomuch as he acts unjustly by deceiving. And he also who lies unintentionally, insomuch as he is at variance with the universal nature, and insomuch as he disturbs the order by fighting against the nature of the world, for he fights against it, who is moved of himself to that which is contrary to truth. For he had received powers from nature, through the neglect of which he is not able now to distinguish falsehood from truth. And indeed, he who pursues pleasure as good and avoids pain as evil is guilty of impiety. For of necessity, such a man must often find fault with the universal nature, alleging that it assigns things to the bad and the good contrary to their deserts. Because frequently, the bad are in the enjoyment of pleasure and possess the things which procure pleasure. But the good have pain for their share and the things which cause pain. And further, he who is afraid of pain will sometimes be afraid of some of the things which will happen in the world. And even this is impiety. And he who pursues pleasure will not abstain from injustice, and this is plainly impiety. Now, with respect to the things towards which the universal nature is equally affected, for it would not have made both unless it was equally affected towards both. Towards these, they who wish to follow nature should be of the same mind with it and equally affected. With respect to pain, then, and pleasure, or death and life, or honor and dishonor, which the universal nature employs equally, whoever is not equally affected is manifestly acting impiously. And I say that the universal nature employs them equally, instead of saying that they will happen alike to those who are produced in continuous series, and to those who come after them by virtue of a certain original movement of providence, according to which it moved from a certain beginning to this ordering of things, having conceived certain principles of the things which were to be, and having determined powers productive of beings, and of changes, and of such like successions. It would be a man's happiest lot to depart from mankind without having had any taste of lying and hypocrisy and luxury and pride. However, to breathe out one's life when a man has had enough